Hello, hello, everybody. It is Thursday. It is April 25th. And that means today is the day that begins the 2024 NFL Draft. Do I sound official? Okay, so we already pretty much know for certain that USC quarterback Caleb Williams will likely go number one in the draft tonight. Now, obviously, there's a whole lot of criteria that teams evaluate that they surmise to determine the best fit for them. We all know, I was wary of some of the criteria that Caleb Williams brings to the table. I encouraged Scout to keep all of this in mind when evaluating Williams. I made these statements months ago. So before I get into the whole discussion regarding Caleb Williams, let's throw it back to those thoughts that I made right here on the show. When and where is it acceptable for a man to cry? Because from what I understood, grown men had some pride and dignity, right? So tell me why USC quarterback and Heisman winner Caleb Williams felt compelled to run to his mommy in the stands and bawl his eyes out. This lasted for at least a full minute. And then it gets even better because RG3 had the audacity to tweet out this. Any NFL team would be lucky to have him as their quarterback, and this emotion shows how much this game means to him. I totally disagree with this. An NFL team needs a leader, not running to his mommy, bawling his eyes out and creating a spectacle for the cameras. Oh, and then after the game, in the post-game presser, Williams said that,
I want to go home and cuddle with my dog and watch some shows.
What's with men these days? How is this deemed acceptable in their minds? Caleb Williams, he's soft, he's a crybaby, and I implore any NFL scouts to keep this pathetic scene in mind when concocting their idea of what a leader on an NFL team looks like. Okay, so I made those statements then. I still believe them now because I do feel like, quarterback, you're the leader. You are leading your team into war. You are setting the example for your team. And I don't think that the spectacle that he created at that point in time was appropriate. That will stand in stone for the rest of time. Now, there's also been a couple other things. And I don't want to be judgmental. I'm not here to be judgmental. I'm just talking when I think of men, again, leading a team. There are certain qualities that I believe a man has. There's a couple other things that have been brought up as far as Caleb Williams is concerned over the past even just several weeks. The way that he dresses, it's a little strange. He was wearing a dress at one point. People were a bit alarmed. He had a pink phone, fuzzy keychain, lip gloss. I mean, it's almost like, is he doing this for shock value? Like, is he just doing this to kind of troll everybody and make them question his manlyhood? Or is this something that, like, he's actually into? Like, he likes the pink, fuzzy phone, keychains, lip gloss, whole dynamic. I just don't see these type of things being taken seriously in an NFL locker room. Like, I just totally do not. I just don't think it's going to fly when all the guys are getting together, talking about the game, having their personal conversations. If he were to come out and these details were kind of to be Caleb's identifying details. Not to mention, he does paint his nails. I'm not down with a guy who paints his nails. That's just me personally. I know there's the whole idea of, oh, creative freedom. I want to express myself. Fine. For me, a guy that paints his nails is not it. So Williams also paints his nails. That's been another one of his kind of identifying traits over the course of his college career. He explains why he wears nail polish to his games, and I'll let him explain it rather than me tell you.
It started, I'd say now 3 years ago. It was my last year of high school. My mom does nails to start it off there, and she's done it for my whole life. And so it's kind of always been around me, and then nobody else does it. I like to kind of do new things. I don't really care what people have to say about it.
So every week it changes?
Every week it changes. Based,
yeah. By the way, there's nothing wrong. I get manicures, man. Yeah, there's nothing wrong.
We've got to keep our hands fresh. Got to keep your hands fresh. This is where all the gold comes from.
I was going to say, this hand right here, this arm is going to take you a lot of places. Yeah. So you got to keep it looking good.
Okay. Manicures, totally cool. I love a guy that gets manicures. If you don't keep your hands and your toes looking nice, then, I mean, I also don't like that. But getting paint on your nails is a different story. However, I did appreciate the fact that William said his mother is a manicurist. I mean, I still don't want a guy that paints his nails, but maybe mommy's career rubbed off a little bit on him. And if that's the case, then I don't know. We'll just leave that one there. He is going to have his nails painted for the draft tonight. He's going to have them in blue and silver, I believe, to match his outfit along with his girlfriend's outfit. Love that he's bringing his girlfriend to the draft. That's awesome. Okay, now I feel like everyone's probably like, you're focusing on all of the superficial aspects of Caleb Williams. And yes, I am focusing on those because I feel like those have caused to be major distractions as far as Caleb Williams is concerned on the back half of his college career. And even in these months where he's declared his entry into the draft and people have been evaluating him. I mean, there's been articles written up all over the place, really honing in and focusing on these details. So it's not like people aren't paying attention. And there are details in those articles in which scouts have made it clear that they're not looking for this type of distraction on their teams. So it is something that's being talked about. So no one come for me in that regard. Now let's focus on what he's been able to accomplish on the field. Now this is where scouts are ultra interested in bringing him onto their team and why he is projected to go number one in tonight's draft. USC, as far as the single season record that's held by Williams for total offense at 4,919 yards. Caleb Williams also has the most touchdowns scored rushing and passing. He has the most passing completions, passes attempted, most passing yards gained, most touchdown passes thrown, most rushing and passing plays, lowest rate of interceptions, and the highest passing efficiency rating. So, I mean, it's pretty tremendous. Told all of these records for a single season at USC, which, as we know, highly competitive program and has been for as long as we can remember. I mean, that is very impressive and exactly why scouts are interested in bringing him on their team. Though it should be noted, there is a lingering doubt in some people's minds as well, because while Williams holds all of this natural talent, and that cannot be disputed, there is the thought, the idea that maybe he's still not working quite as hard as he possibly could. And if that were to be the case, who knows what those numbers would look like. So maybe there's the idea that he's a bit lazy, that he mails it in at certain points in time. But Caleb Williams wants to dispel that thought before entering the draft, and he's made that very clear. And here's what he had to say as far as what he would bring to an NFL team.
They draft me, my plan is to go work my ass off, get after it, get in the playbook really heavily, and you know, handle things the way things need to be handled, mentally, physically, nutrition and treatment and you know, sleep and all of that. Handling all of that the way it needs to be handled and get as far as I can in, you know, and close as I can to February, probably, 12th, 13th of next year in NOLA.
Yeah.
All right. So he says he is ready to get to work. He is ready to put in all of the effort. I don't know what kind of distractions he is going to bring to any team as far as all of the details that I got into at the very beginning of the show. But if he's able to put up numbers like he did at USC, if he goes in and works his tail off, then I think teams will be able to look past the pink phone cases, the fuzzy keychains, the lip gloss, the wearing of dresses. Honestly, I actually don't know if they'll be able to get past those things. Those are pretty strange. I don't know that I can even make sense of all this on my own. So let's go ahead and bring in former Chicago Bear, former NFL player, Clay Harbor, who can help me to make sense of all of this. And we can get into it because, Clay, first of all, hello. I'm glad to see you again.
Oh, it's good to see you, Charlie, as always.
Okay, so super talented guy. Doubts on how hard he works. Says he's going to be working just as hard as any other player, if not more, when drafted. But there are the weird details that we have come to know as Caleb Williams' identity. I'm concerned if he's even going to be where... I'm sorry. I said that you played for the Bears. You played for the Eagles. You're a Chicago guy, though. So
yeah, I'm a Chicago...
Sorry.
I'm from Chicago. I cover the Bears for the 670 to Score, NBC Sports Chicago, post game on CBS. So it's honestly a common mistake, Charlie. I do a ton of Bears stuff, but I actually never played for the Bears.
Okay, well, yeah, honest mistake right there. But what can you tell me as far as what you believe Caleb Williams is going to bring to the table. Because as we know it, at this very moment, he will be going to the Chicago Bears, number one in the NFL draft. Do you believe he's going to be a good fit? Do you believe, I'm asking a lot of questions right off the top, we'll get through them. Do you believe he's going to be the hardest worker in the room like he claims to be? And do you believe that all of these, we'll call them superficial details, but they can serve as distractions, will be a disadvantage to the team that he ultimately gets drafted by?
It's a different time now. I would say back in 2009, 2010, when I got drafted in the locker room, that's probably not going to fly. You're probably going to get clowned by some of the players, and it's a different time. But in today's age, I think there's a lot of things that's different. You don't need to be the typical masculine quarterback, leader of the team like you used to. And I think that he will find a way to assimilate into Chicago. And Chicago, to me, is so desperate for a quarterback, Charlie. They don't care if he wore a clown suit to work every day. You know, they're the only team in the NFL history that hasn't had a 4,000-yard passer or a 30-yard touchdown thrower. So Chicago is desperate for a quarterback. He could come in wearing a cape. He could come in wearing leotard. They want a quarterback. That's what they want. And on the field, I love Caleb Williams. He needs to stop fumbling so much. He needs to get rid of the ball quicker on some occasions. But there's no doubting that this guy has special talent. You listed off his stats. We don't need to go through that. But as an NFL player, when I see him on the field, I see a guy that plays hard. I see a guy that puts it on the line for his teammates. I see a guy that can make some of those out-of-pocket, off-platform throws, a la Patrick Mahomes, a la Aaron Rodgers, a guy like that. So in Chicago, it's a gritty, tough town, but they are so desperate for a quarterback that they don't care what this guy looks like and does off the field. If he can come in, work hard, and do the things right on the field and win some games, it don't matter. Like I said, he can wear a Bozo outfit. And if he could play quarterback, they're not going to care. So that's my thoughts on that. If he plays well on the field, all the other stuff's going to get overlooked.
Do you think it's possible that he wears a dress to the draft tonight?
No, I was watching his interview on the Ryan Clark's podcast, The Pivot. He said he's going to wear a suit.
Yeah.
And he's going to look clean. So I think that's a good step. You know, you're going into your first big job interview. You know, you're getting drafted. So he's wearing a clean suit. He says, Ryan Clark-esque. When I listened to that podcast, so I like that. There's going to be no dress. And I don't think that's the right way to go into Chicago. Chicago's not L.A., Charlie. You're in the Midwest here. It's a little more conservative. There's not as much crazy stuff going on out there. It's not the Hollywood, you know, woke central. So you really got to kind of bring a little bit more grit, hard work, and earn your keep in this city. And if he can do that, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, and also, here's the thing. I think a lot of what he does, I can't decide anymore, is if he's doing it for the purpose of trolling people. Because, I mean, having like a pink fuzzy keychain or a pink phone, lip gloss, I mean, it just feels very extra. And he knows that, especially when he's in these, you know, public forums at press conferences, things like that. Do you think that this is actually, these are things that he enjoys? Like, he's really into lip gloss and fuzzy keychains, or is he trying to troll us all right now?
You know, I've been trying to figure this one out too, since obviously came out, the Bears were going this direction, trading Justin Fields, going Caleb Williams, because I'm be covering this guy a lot. And from everything I've seen and gathered on the guy, and I was very skeptical at first, but I've really come around just listening to his interviews. He's saying all the right things. He's like, hey, it's just a piece of my personality. And he's going to be a guy that's also an entertainer. You think of, you know, a guy like Prince, you know, a guy like, you know, something like Prince is your quarterback. Okay. You're going to Dennis Rodman had success in Chicago. The guy played well on the court. So nobody really cared about that crazy stuff, wearing the dresses, cross-dressing stuff he did off the court. They don't remember that. What they remember is the three rings that he helped bring with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. So to me, that's the most important part.
Yeah, I think Dennis Rodman probably is the most appropriate comparison. I'm glad you just made that one, because when I was thinking about the Prince comparison, I'm like, It just didn't feel right. So actually, Dennis Rodman, I can appreciate a little bit more because he was a phenomenal athlete. And of course, like you said, helped to bring multiple championships to Chicago. Okay, so Clay, let's throw it back. It's the night of the 2024 draft. What year were you drafted in?
I don't like sharing this, Charlie, because it makes me feel kind of old, but I was drafted in 2010. You know, it's 14 years, going on 15 years now.
Okay, and you were drafted 125th overall. What do you remember about that day? Like, just, I want all of the details, as vivid as possible. Let's take a walk down memory lane.
All right, so I'm from this small country town. It's called Dwight, Illinois. So there's the suburbs of Chicago, and then after that, there's these small towns. And I'm from the small town of Dwight. So the first thing I remember is it was 3 days in the draft. First day, didn't know I wasn't going to draft. I was thinking I was going the third round, second day. So there's people coming to my house. Hey, man, you didn't get drafted. You think you'll get drafted? When you going? In my small town, they have no realization that this is like a pretty stressful day for me. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to the NFL draft. So I went and I got a hotel at my local small town and sat there with a couple of my best friends, my dad, my brother, and we waited and watched the draft. And eventually I remember getting a call on my phone and didn't know the number. And I pick up the phone and it was, hello, is this Clay? I'm like, yeah. He goes, Philly sounds familiar. This is Andy Reid. We're going to draft you here in the fourth round if that's okay with you. I'm like, yeah. I'm trying to get it out as fast as I can. I'm like, yeah, that's perfectly fine. He's like, all right, great. We're going to put you on with our offensive coordinator and looking forward to making you a Philadelphia Eagle. You know, thanks, Coach Reed. I'm looking forward to it too. And I just remember being so excited. We had some champagne. We popped champagne because it's such a, for these guys, it's just such a accomplishment and like a realization of a goal you've worked so hard for, you know, whole life, and especially me going from being this underprivileged kid and, you know, growing up on food stamps and, you know, the lunch ticket and government housing and just finally being able to do things to help my family and friends and coming from this place. And now you're finally, you know, kind of financially stable in that situation. So it's really special. We popped the champagne, but the thing people don't realize, you don't got much time to celebrate. 3-4 days later, you are flying out for rookie mini camp. So you get a couple days to celebrate, enjoy it. And then a couple days after that, you're literally flying out for rookie mini camp and you're getting in the playbook and you're playing against people. So enjoy it, celebrate it, but right away you're getting the playbook and you are on a flight to whatever city you're getting drafted to and you're playing football right away. So it's actually a really quick turnaround, but really fun and exciting.
That is such a cool story. I just can only imagine sitting there. And when your phone rings, you know, right? I mean, could you even imagine though, unless you just got like some random spam call, you know, these days you get all these spam calls 24/7. You pick up a number you don't know and they're like, would you like to sign up to be a part of the insurance club for geriatrics? You're like, oh my God, please.
Like, do you realize what you've done? I'm waiting on a call to get drafted in the NFL. So yeah, it was actually really funny. And the worst part about it though is the Eagles actually had a pick earlier in the fourth round. And they said they got my number mixed up and they were trying to call me earlier. So I could have been drafted a few picks earlier. I don't know. It would have been the same round, but they said they were trying and they finally got my right number and called me. Next thing you know, I get drafted to the Philadelphia Eagles. So you got to make sure all the contact stuff is right nowadays with the social media and everybody's more connected. I don't know if you remember those old days, Charlie, when you actually have like a landline and, you know, those were still floating around there. So there was a couple different numbers you typically would call. So that was funny back then, but very exciting time. And the other thing I remember is obviously the way your family reacts and seeing that. And that's something these players, the people that helped you to grow and get there. And it's just really cool being around them. But I wasn't the guy that wanted to have the draft party, because there's always that one guy has a draft party, expects to get drafted, doesn't get drafted.
And then he doesn't.
And then you're just sitting there with a bunch of pasta salad and potato salad waiting to get eaten, and nobody wants to because you're not really celebrating anything.
Yeah, right. Like people are like scared to take a bite because they're like, oh, I feel bad, but like I'm hungry. What do I do? Oh my gosh. That's such a cool story though. Wow. Okay. I'm glad to have had a little bit of a, you know, a trip back to 2010 with you. That was a fun memory. Okay. So now here we are 14 years later. Clay, any draft predictions that are a little bit out of left field or bold that you're making right now as the hours tick down until the number one draft is called?
I think Drake May will probably slide a little bit. I got J.J. McCarthy as the third quarterback taken. And I wouldn't even be surprised if Bo Nix or Michael Penix slid in front of Drake May. Drake May, watching his film, and I'm breaking it down and hearing my scout buddies. I got buddies that are scouts and know stuff in the league. And Drake May has all the tools. He's big, good-looking guy in NFL terms, big arm. But the film doesn't show that. So you're kind of going off his traits. Guy's big, he can run, he can throw. So some teams might say, hey, we'll take a risk on that. But some teams are going to say, you got to show me on the field. And that's something he really didn't do this last season at North Carolina. So I wouldn't be surprised if Drake May slid a little bit. Everything J.J. McCarthy is trending upward. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets drafted a little high. I think the Bears, my Chicago Bears, got the 9th pick. If Romo Dunze or Joe Alt aren't there, I expect them to trade back and to get more picks because they traded that second-round pick for Montez Sweat, recoup some more picks because they still got some holes on the roster. And there's actually a lot of depth in that first 20 picks in the NFL this year in the draft. And then after you get the 20 from like 20 to 75, 80, I think there's some similar type players. And after that, I think the depth really falls off. So everybody's going to want to kind of be in that top 80. And then there's a lot of depth in that top 20. So I think you're going to see some movement, more trades than usual this year.
So do you think the Giants are, because you talk about Drake May. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that they're going to go after.
Yes, I think J.J. McCarthy. Here's my bold prediction, Charlie. I know you guys are in New York over there. And my bold prediction is Brian Daboll, my old tight end coach for the New England Patriots. He's my tight end coach, one of the smartest coaches I've ever had. I know he doesn't get a great rap out in New York, but I think Daboll is the right guy for the job. I love the guy. He's a stern dude. He's a disciplinarian. You got to be disciplined. You got to be on your stuff. You got to know the playbook. But Drake May, his coach coached with Daboll at Alabama. So he was running the same playbook that Brian Daboll does. Dable's a guy that wants you to be able to recite these plays back and forth. And everything here, J.J. McCarthy is a quick, smart guy. So he already knows the playbook. He could go in right away and challenge Daniel Jones for a starting job. Obviously, they've already said Daniel Jones our starting quarterback. Some people think J.J. could sit. But I think Daboll knows that Daniel Jones isn't the guy. He needs to throw the ball. Tom Brady was our quarterback in New England, okay? And the one thing he said, I remember him telling me this personally, as when he was an offensive coordinator for the Browns, and he comes back next year to the Patriots. He says, "I'll never take another job again unless I have a good quarterback." And of course, he did that with Daniel Jones. But I think he realizes to win football games, you need a good quarterback, and he needs to make something there. And to me, everything lines up with McCarthy, with his former coach, McCarthy already knowing the playbook. So I think this is something that could surprise a lot of people, but people in the NFL circles know McCarthy is looked at maybe even higher than a guy like Drake May.
Okay, so you're saying McCarthy to the Giants.
Yes. I think Daboll and McCarthy is going to be, they're going to tie themselves together. And you think about it. Daboll had a great relationship and a long relationship with another Michigan quarterback when I was at New England, a guy who he liked a lot. And his name was obviously Tom Brady. Jim Harbaugh called J.J. McCarthy the best quarterback to ever play at Michigan. So he's even saying that about Tom Brady. And J.J. McCarthy has that same competitiveness. You know, this guy's lost one game in his college career. He won the state championship in high school. So he loves that competitiveness. Quick story, Tom Brady, ultra competitive. There was this game that Daboll used to play in the tight end room with Gronk, Martellus Bennett, where you'd have to name a play. Say the play was called stick. You would have to recite. He would say stick. You'd have to go green right 373, Y stick X slant. Or he would do it the reverse of that. And he would say green right 373, Y stick X slant. And you'd have to go stick. I got really good at this game. And one time Tom Brady comes into the tight end room. We're going over our film from the day before. And Dable goes, Tom, I bet you can't beat Clay in this game. He's like, come on, Dable. Clay's been here for what, 30 seconds? It's when I just signed. I got really good at this game. I would do the voice notes, voice memos in my phone, listening to it on the way to work. When I woke up in the morning before bed, I got really good at these plays. Tom comes in the room. I beat him. And I thought he was joking. But when Tom leaves, he has some choice words for me that I probably can't say on air. Slams the door and everybody's laughing. Gronk, oh my gosh, that's crazy. Everybody's hyping it up. The next day, I kind of forget about it. We're going over meetings again, what we're going to do in practice that day. Door opens. All right, Clay, choice word, let's go. Everybody's on the tables. Oh my God, let's go, Clay, let's go. Tom comes back. The next day, the same game, he beats me 5-0. He went home. He studied just to come back and make sure that I knew that I couldn't beat him in that game. That's how competitive he is. Instead of hanging out with his wife and kids, he goes back, opens the playbook, studies just to make sure that he would beat me in that game because he didn't want me thinking that I was better than him in anything. That's the type of competitiveness that JJ McCarthy has, do anything for the team to win. That's what Brian Dable values. And that's why I think it's a perfect match for him and JJ McCarthy.
All right. Well, listen, after that story, never heard before, by the way, I tend to believe you. I mean, I think if you feel like JJ McCarthy is as hard of a worker, as dedicated to his craft as Tom Brady, and if scouts and teams are able to see that, then I'm probably with you that he's the right choice for the Giants. So New York, listen up. This might be your new guy. Okay, let's talk about another great from the past, Clay. Reggie Bush. Some awesome news as far as he's concerned. He's finally, I mean, we have all been waiting to hear this news for so long now. He's finally getting his Heisman Trophy back. Remember, he got it back in 2005, and it was determined that he took benefits that violated the NCAA rules, specifically his family allegedly received housing and money in violation of the NCAA rules, which, by the way, now would be allowed in the NIL era. So now they're saying, okay, well, maybe we should ease up a little bit. And, you know, you can't crack down as hard on Reggie Bush when, meanwhile, today, this would be totally, totally acceptable. So he's getting his trophy back. I know when I read this, I immediately texted the news to my producer because I thought this was BS in the first place. So what was your reaction when you first read this news that he's getting his Heisman back?
I'm happy for him. I mean, if you know, people are my age or older, I mean, they remember he's probably one of the greatest college football players of all time. And it was really a disservice to him to not have that Heisman Trophy because he earned that. And at USC, this guy was incredible. Him and Matt Leiner, what they were able to do, win a national championship, lost the next one to Vince Young, one of the best college football games I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, incredible player. And obviously he broke the rules, but nowadays he would be getting the minimum NIL deal. You look what Caleb Williams is making. Caleb Williams is going to come into that locker room even before he gets his first NFL check and be richer than probably everybody on the team barring 5 to 10 players. Okay. That's unheard of. So give Reggie his Heisman. He earned it. This guy deserved it. One of the greatest college football players of all time. Put him back in the Hall of Fame there, in the College Football Hall of Fame. Give him his Heisman. He earned it. So I'm really happy about this, and I think it's well-deserved, and I think it's overdue.
Mm-hmm. Something else I'm sure you're probably pretty happy about. It looks like Chicago's getting a new stadium. And I took a look at the building plans. We'll actually watch that here in a second. I was super, super impressed and blown away. So let's take a look at that, and then we'll come back and get your reaction. Oh, okay, we can talk over this. Cool. Yeah, lakefront property, Clay. Look at that. The sun's shining. It's glistening. This brand new building. It's beautiful. I mean, Chicago's got to be excited about this.
Yeah, Chicago needs some good news because, I mean, everything that's been happening with our mayor, Brandon Johnson, everything going on down there has been tough and been some poor leadership. But I think this puts Chicago right back on the map. Obviously, it's going to be a long-term project, but this happens. I mean, Chicago is a beautiful city with this skyline, with the lakefront. You put that right there. I think it's amazing. I wanted to keep the Bears in Chicago. It's one of the special things about the city of Chicago. is the Bears play in Chicago. I love riding my bike. I'm 10 minutes away. I ride my bike to the games. I ride my bike. I tailgate. I bike back. To me, I'm a little selfish because I live in the city. And now you got a stadium that's indoor, outdoor too. So you got, it's not going to be as cold. You know, you got the roof. You still get a little bit of the outdoor atmosphere. You could play basketball there. As you can see, it's just going to be incredible. If this really gets done, these projections, I think it would be great for the city, in a city that needs some things like this. If you see the, you know, the occupancy, we just had Dom's Fresh Market, Foxtrot close all across the city just because of some of the economic conditions they're facing. If this happens, this is great for the city, my hometown. I would love it. And I'll be biking lakefront and biking to the games, and it looks amazing. I think that's even going to bring more free agents to the Bears that want to play in a city, that in a stadium that is that beautiful.
Well, you mentioned if it gets done, and of course you have to say if it gets done, because I can't imagine the amount of money that's going to take to make this project happen. You think they're going to be able to find all that money, Clay?
I don't know. That's the question. Like I said, the leadership in Chicago, as far as, you know, our mayor and everything, isn't the greatest. And I think everybody is starting to see that, but hopefully Kevin Warren, the president of the Bears, I think he's really good. Ryan Poles is really good. And these two guys, you know, Kevin Warren was the president of the Minnesota Vikings when they got their stadium. If you know anything about the Viking stadium, that place is great. I used to love playing there. One of my favorite stadiums to play. Incredible stadium. He got that done in an unprecedented amount of time. All the permits, the building is one of the quickest to ever happen in professional sports. That guy right now is our president. And this is his big project. This is his legacy. And he knows that. He's going to work tirelessly to get this done. This guy was the former commissioner of the Big Ten. He knows what he's doing. He's built stadiums before. If anybody can do it, even in a city with Chicago that's not the best run, I think that Kevin Warren can get this job done, and it will be great for everyone, the players, the team, and especially the city of Chicago.
All right, well, potentially lots of positives coming Chicago's way starting tonight with the NFL draft, securing that number one pick, which, like we said at the beginning, probably going to be Caleb Williams. And I hope for nothing more than for him to be the shining star that the Bears need him to be.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, he's got that Dennis Rodman personality. If he does everything on the field, it's a perfect correlation there. Dennis Rodman, people remember the rings. Work your tail off, Caleb. If you're watching this, work your tail off, put in the time, learn the playbook, earn your teammates' respect, do everything you can, and the city will love you. We are desperate for a quarterback, so fingers crossed that he becomes a great.
I'll cross my fingers with you. Clay, thank you so much. Always good to see you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Outkick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
All right, and finally, before I let all of you go, obviously there was a big story that was rocking the Outkick.com website recently, and a lot of other mainstream news websites as well, because Dan Krzyzewski went and asked the question to Dawn Staley whether or not transgender athletes belong in women's sports. Obviously, that caused a bit of a commotion. So on the tails of that, he decided to ask Iowa's Lisa Bluter and 14 other women's basketball questions, the same question, rather, about the trans athletes competing in female sports. He didn't really get the responses he was looking for, probably because in most cases he got no responses at all. So here's Dan Z yesterday when he joined Hot Mike to talk about it.
Dan, just thinking about the opportunity for, you know, the big voices of the sport to step up and say something. Of course, you gave Dawn Staley that platform. But this is the next opportunity, given the options that you had to go through. And Kim Mulkey did not participate. Gino Auriemma, Tara Vanderveer. We saw the names in the list there, but the names that come to mind and the recognition of women's college basketball, it could end with them if they are the collective voice of this issue that seems pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, so this is another thing that I found interesting was, you know, look, there's a list of criticisms I could give you that
sure.
people sent,
yeah.
but
right.
there were some that I paid attention to, and as you mentioned, one of them was you didn't ask enough coaches, and I thought, well, that's reasonable and fair, so I'm going to do that. Another one was well, why are you even asking the coaches? They aren't the decision makers. They aren't the ones at the NCAA. And I reject that, because if Dawn Staley had come out on the other side and Lisa Bluter had come out with a strong statement, that puts pressure on the decision makers because they listen to people like this. If Gino Auriemma came out and said, I'm totally against this, this should not be part of our game, you think decision makers at the NCAA wouldn't take that into account, that that wouldn't play a role in actually changing policy? Sure. But it absolutely would.
And think about it from the attention given to the women's Final Four. It doesn't even have to be about women's college basketball, just women's athletics, right? They can be, I mean, we're talking to the Nick Sabans of women's sports, really. If you think about the names and the attention given and the eyeballs on the product at that time.
Absolutely. And that's why we asked them. And that's why I made sure to try and include everyone. I had to cut it off somewhere. Email all 360 Division I schools, but I thought, well, Sweet 16, that's sort of that's a good benchmarker, good barometer for the top coaches generally are in that group. And as you mentioned, the names we've talked about, all big names. And yeah, it was disappointing. I mean, not surprising, of course, but right. It is disappointing to get just we're not touching this.
I got to say, it is disappointing. And I'm also not surprised, though. I think a point that we brought up a couple of weeks ago when the story was really making waves was that a lot of coaches said this isn't the time or the place to be answering questions like that. There's never necessarily going to be a time or a place, but that's an excuse that I believe coaches will continually put forward so they don't have to address this issue, which probably is pretty uncomfortable for a lot of them, because even if they are on the side of not believing trans athletes should be in sports, they can't necessarily make that public because we all know the blowback they will get from saying that. And of course, if they are on the side of wanting to allow biological men to compete in women's sports, obviously going to get a lot of blowback from that as well. So it's a tough spot they're being put in, but we do need more strong, very powerful women like these ones to stand up, who have a platform and start taking a stand. Otherwise, things could get very dark, which of course they already are. But let's end things on a positive note, guys. As a reminder, the 2024 NFL draft is tonight, and there is a special Outkick draft party that we want all of you to be a part of. So this is going down with Clay Travis, Chad Withrow, Jonathan Hutton, taking place on Outkick.com, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. Going to be a whole lot of fun, so make sure you do not miss a moment of that. And make sure you don't miss a moment of the show either. Another episode coming your way after the draft tomorrow morning. In the meantime, follow me on social media at CharlieOnTV, and I will see all of you then for another episode of the show. Have a good one.